Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's Managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Instagram. Maybe you're listening later wherever you get podcasts. It's all good because we are here. We've got a bunch of awesome guests. Justin has a curtain, a beautiful curtain of some sort.
Look at him. I've got West Coast energy right now. I didn't mean to. Yeah. I'm in a side room, and it's just feels very California dreaming. You know, floral.
100%. That's nice. Is that what is that? Is that a shower curtain? What's going on?
No, it's a closet thing.
Just a little
Hollywood reveal. How the
wow. And you went at Airbnb. You went to the section where they're like grandma's house, right?
Yes, this is a shag carpeting. I'm sleeping in a bed of potpourri. It's perfect. Yes,
but you can smoke it, right? So that's what's nice.
Yeah, yeah. I'm inside of a 1970s movie, essentially.
Grandma's house.
Grandma's house. A 1970 grandma's house. Great. We have two great guests for you this evening. And why don't we bring in our first one now? She is the creator of the new book, Howl, from Ahoy Comics, Elisa Quitney. Elisa, welcome.
Hello.
So excited to talk about this book. It just came out. It's on stands now, and everybody should check it out. Got art by Morissette. Did I pronounce that correctly?
I mispronounced it for, I think, 7 of our 10-year collaboration. It is Morissette.
Of course, it's in French.
This is French.
There we go. And issue 2 is going to be in stands February 19th. If people haven't checked out the first issue, it's great. It is set around the beatnik generation in New York City. Shows a woman who falls in love with a science fiction writer. And meanwhile, the concept, the picture is the science fiction might not be quite as fictional as you might expect as things build throughout the issue. I really love this book. And one of the things that I really loved about it is how lived in the period felt and how well explored. Not to put you on the spot, but your dad was a science fiction writer around the same time. Is any of this feeding off of stories he told you, or is it just research, imagination? Where is it coming from?
Oh, there is so much feeding. There's a great deal of feeding. So I was, you know, very open in all of the publicity materials about saying this was very much based on both my parents' real life experience and on, you know, a million B movie tropes from the 1950s.
Nice.
So my dad was the science fiction writer Robert Sheckley. And if, you know, listeners or watchers, you know, consumers do not know who Robert Sheckley was. Well, come, children, let me
gather close.
So he was an absurdist humorist, best known for his short stories. He's considered an uncredited influence on Douglas Adams.
Oh,
his short story, The Seventh Victim, later turned into a novel. The 10th Victim became a movie with Marcello Mastroianni and Ursula Andress wearing a metal brassiere that shoots. And obviously that kind of found its way, I think, into Austin Powers.
Yes, of course. Wow. I was going to say, now you've hit some reference.
Thank you for the fun right history the lesson. This was great.
Yeah.
But here's the thing that I want to say. So I was not raised by Robert Sheckley, and neither were the three other children, offspring of different mothers. So we all share this. We share his DNA and his lack of father skills. But I was very much raised by my mother and by my father's bookcase. Filled with his books and by his the books of others, and you know, the best science fiction of 1950 whatever, 60 whatever. So that had a big influence on me. And my mother, I'm sorry, my dog is
well sick. he wants to share his thoughts.
And come on, girl, this is
her thoughts.
Hilda, she might be a pod dog.
Oh yes,
all welcome. I love it.
Yeah.
So anyway, my mother, Ziva Quitney, taught me at a very young age all the important, you know, lessons in life, the distinction between absurdism and existentialism. And, you know, and she talked about their time in Greenwich Village when they were living together.
Wow.
And so a lot of this stuff, and even lines of dialogue, are actually taken from, I supposedly, after they were dating a short time, my father said to my mother a line which I think more men should use, or women as the case may be, "Let's not go sticking fingers in each other's souls."
Ooh, wow.
Strong stance.
And at that moment, the phone rang and another guy asked my mother out. And she said, okay, because, you know, no fingers in souls.
Right.
And
that's a plus.
That convinced my father that he did indeed really, really want fingers and souls.
Wow.
So, and that's, without spoiling too much, that directly is in the first issue of the book. I mean, what's it like for you then as a writer taking these family stories you probably sat with most of, if not your entire life, and then translating them and suddenly seeing them on the comic book page?
You know, I think for any writer who writes at least partially out of you know direct experience or close experience, you have to live with something long enough in order to, you know, digest it enough to be able to manipulate the material and not just be lost in it.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that was the case for me, that I had enough distance on it to be able to find the humor in it and to sort of know mostly what I was doing with it. It did lead to some amusing moments. As I say, Alain, which is, Morisset is his artist name, but his real name, first name is Alain. And there was one scene with the fingers and souls where I said, you know, Ziva, which is actually my mother's name too, Ziva has to be naked. And so you know, it's sort of a weird thing because I knew what was right for the scene. And Alain and I are very much about what works for the scene. It had to be both intimate, she had to be vulnerable, and she had to be casual in her nudity in a way that let the reader know that we are not in the 1950s of, you know, Happy Days or
Wow. Yeah, first off, thank you so much for sharing not only your story in this story, but also on the podcast. I also wanted to talk to you. You talked about this being kind of like this idea of being raised by a bookcase. You have a glorious bookcase behind you. Is that, you know, is this, are you carrying on the tradition? Are you going to be like, you know, you try to make an impressive bookcase for children to be in awe of, or...
Yeah, no, I mean, I've inherited my a lot of books from my father, from my mother, and from a lifetime of hoarding, you know.
Well, good for you. Good
what
for you.
What Pete really wants to ask, but he's embarrassed to ask, is do you have a favorite thing in your bookcase behind
your nerd wall of sorts, if you will?
Is there a treasured possession?
Yes, yes. Okay, so my favorite thing is
prime spot.
Okay, so my daughter painted this. It is done in the style of shag artwork, this kind of late 50s, groovy early 60s. And that's me with our now deceased cat and my dog.
Wow, that's awesome.
Hipster Lotharia.
So it sounds like if your daughter's painting in a style from the same period as Howl, is this a time period you're obsessed with? And how do you so
respectfully,
how are you
respectfully
bringing
asking that
respectfully? Respectfully, yeah. How are you bringing that, or why are you bringing that into the present day?
I'm, you know, I got really interested in the late 50s, early 60s. I wasn't always the previous project that I did with Maurice. We went back to, I think it was 19, I can never remember if it was 73 or 74. So I'm interested in the past right now. And I think in part because when you can write about the present through the past or through, the future in ways that you can't when you're, you know, putting it, you know, directly on the head. But also I'm old enough now that I'm fascinated by the changes and I can understand. I mean, I wasn't alive, obviously, in this time period I'm writing about, which is when my parents first met. But I can see now that in some ways that period of the late 50s was closer to the 70s of my actual childhood than the 70s of my childhood is to the present moment. A lot of technological things have changed the society.
Yeah. Wow. Given that so much, like we've been talking about, is based on your actual life and is sort of a docudrama in a certain way, or at least a biographical comic. Where does the science fiction come in, or when did the science fiction come in your process?
Oh, you know, I knew it was going to be about the science fiction community in Greenwich Village. And I was talking with Karen Berger, who had been my boss and my friend. And, you know, Karen was my boss. And Tom Pyre was my office mate at in the days when I was an editor at Vertigo. And he's now was my editor on this project and on Guild. So anyway, I was walking with Karen at a Comic-Con where she introduced me to an idea and a drink. And the drink was terrible. It was an espresso martini. It made me feel really sick. And I don't think caffeine and alcohol belong together in my system. But I was talking to her about the idea and she said there should be a science fiction element to it. Mm-hmm. And that that began to shift my thinking. And I think, you know, I think at this point earlier on when I was thinking about this, I saw it as being serious. You know, I saw it as being sort of literary women's fiction. And then she said science fiction. And at that point, I realized on my own, oh, and it needs to be funny. This needs to be, because when the science fiction I've loved best has this element of strong social satire and humor to it. I kind of like my science fiction and my horror with lots and lots of humor. And my alcohol without caffeine.
Great. So many lessons learned that one.
Yeah, I love that Comic-Con story. Scroll. And controversial take, Karen Berger, good editor. I'm just going to say that. First person to say that, I think, in history.
Horrible bartender. Great editor.
Horrible bartender. What about the title Howl? Obviously, that comes from the Allen Ginsberg, if I'm getting the name right, poem. Yes. But why was that the right title for this book?
We went through so many titles with this. It was originally called Future Wife, which is still a title I love. But yeah, I think the thought was that might be a little too, you know, expecting everyone to be in spacesuits. And then for a long time, Tom was so obsessed with flesh puppets. And I got to really like it. I suggested a Faulknerian kind of title of Flesh and Fungus. No one but me liked it. And then it just, it seemed like we wanted something that was one word, very similar to Guilt. And a friend suggested Howl, and it seemed perfect, both because of the Ginsberg poem and also because in the 1978 Invasion of the Body Snatchers, this is sort of famous point in Howl that the pod, the spore, you know, pod infested people, when they recognize a human, they human sound. So fun story. Shortly after I saw that film in 78, I would have been 12 or 13. I'm walking down Broadway. I lived on the Upper West Side. And I see my mom walking toward me, and I think she was with a friend. And I just, you know, there's that moment where I was like, oh, it's my mom. And then she pointed at me in the middle of Broadway, just like, So I feel in so many ways that this captures the spirit of my mother.
Wow. That's pretty awesome.
That's awesome. I feel like it's, again, not to keep getting into your process, but all these memories, were you writing them down at the time as a younger person? Or are you just like have such a memory that you're able to pull them out to put into this story?
Well, that memory stayed with me. My mom and I just have been sort of best friends my whole life. And we were always talking. And around 2017, 2018, I realized her memory was beginning to go. And so I began to interview her for for some of this. That's and she and went on to develop Alzheimer's and also aphasia. So she couldn't really speak very well. But shortly before she died this year, she said to me Hebrew, which she still spoke, she said, are you at Kotevet? You know, are you still writing? And I said, yeah, I'm writing about you.
Oh, that's so nice. And so great to have those interviews, I'm sure, especially throughout that time is really nice.
Given that you've been working with Morrissey so long, what is it about
Morrissey?
Morrissey. From down here, Alex, all the way down.
Yes.
What works about that partnership?
Gosh. Well, we were fixed up. We didn't know each other. We were fixed up for Mystic U. He was the original artist in the. So Mystic U, which is a series I did with DC, I'm trying to remember the years. It was around 2015 that we were originally talking about it, and then it kind of died and it got resurrected. And the wonderful artist Mike Norton and I did it. By the way, it's coming out in a special YA format.
Awesome. Cool.
So DC was in the process of moving, and Alan and I, Morrissey and I, were talking, and I've course had been an editor, so I understood that he was feeling, you know, sort of, where are they? I've sent them sketches. Why has no one gotten back to me? And so, you know, I said, let me see if I can run interference a little and get some more feedback. And we ended up talking a lot, and we ended up talking about the movies we loved and the stories we loved and the comics we loved. And bit by bit, we thought, you know, we really want to work together. And when he left the project, because it was just taking too long to get off the ground, we knew we were going to work together. And we just kept. So then we did a little something for Femme Magnifique, which was something Shelley Bond did. And I think we did a cryptid story first. We did an Edgar Allan Poe story, a wonderfully thick Berenice story. And just the minute we started working, that those years of talking a lot meant that I could say something like teeth everywhere, the bedspread, like teeth, there's good, you know, it's a very, am I allowed? I can say, right? I can say it.
Yeah, swear.
The brief for the Edgar Allan Poe's was be Poe, but worse. And so I turned Berenice, which is a sick story, into a real vagina dentata story.
Yeah, I feel like I knew where you were going with that. Yeah.
Awesome. What else? What can you tease about what is coming up in Howl, if anything, in the second issue?
Oh gosh, so much good stuff. So I was inspired by, in part, by John Carpenter's The Thing, the 1982 Thing.
Yeah.
And I really was thinking a lot about. As some people know, and not everyone, Rob Bottin was this whiz kid, very young practical effects guy. And he was so creative in his practical effects of what the monster could do and become in that film. And I was thinking, I kind of, part of my thought process here was, if you could take John Carpenter's protean monster in The Thing and that Rob Bottin genius and John Carpenter's sexy young Jeff Bridges shape-shifting alien in Starman, kind of morph those things along with my autobiographical material, that would be swell. And so that is hopefully what's coming. And I have to say that I think Morrissey really, I kept asking him to do really impossible things with the, and he just, I think he really enjoyed it. A lot of
great.
Awesome. Before we let you go, anything else you would like to plug? You obviously have a lot of projects and different things going on.
Oh, thank you. Let's see. Well, first of all, I will be at Cosmic Con in Chelsea in New York City.
Oh, nice.
February, I think it's 15th. I'll be on a couple of panels, and the second panel will be with Stuart Moore, fellow former editor, writer.
Yes,
and
great guy.
He'll be talking Howl and Captain America. So come if you're in the neighborhood. And yeah, Mystic U is going to be coming out, I think, in a YA version 4th of March. And those are the top of the pops.
All right.
Awesome. That's a lot. Elisa, thank you so much for coming on. Congrats on the book. It's great. And I can't to see the rest of the way that it goes. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Good luck later.
All right. Once again, the book is called Howl. It's out now from Ahoy Comics, the first issue. Second issue is out on February 19th.
Yeah.
And it is great. Just
fun read.
Another banger from Ahoy Comics. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're saying the same thing with different
words. We are. We're so simpatico.
Do you know who I hope we're simpatico with as well is our next guest? He is the creator of The Murder Next Door, which is coming out February 4th from Street Noise Books. Ladies and gentlemen, Hugh Dendrati. Hello,
hey,
Hugh.
Hey. Welcome. Hi, thanks for having me.
Did I mangle your last name, Hugh?
No, you actually got it right.
Yes.
Yeah.
First time in 18 years I've gotten a last name right, so I appreciate
incredible.
This book is great as well. Very excited to talk about it. I don't know. I mean, this is based on a real thing as well, so there is a little bit of comparison there. Since it's not coming out for a little bit, though, what do you want to say about it? What can we tease or talk about with
Well, yeah, let me give him a little pitch. I mean, sure. When I was 10, my next door neighbor was murdered, and next door neighbor's my neighbor's sons were my close friends, and we all discovered the body together. And it was just one of those, you know, horrible traumas that happens to some people and happened to me at 10 years old. And but I think probably because it wasn't my mother who was killed, I was very aware of how much my friends had suffered, you know, and how much they were suffering.
Yeah.
And I think I deprecated my own trauma and sort of learned not to talk about it and went through life just being like, well, that was the thing that happened to me and I should move on. And then, you know, just decades later, I was in therapy and it kind of kept coming up, you know, in my therapy sessions. And I realized I have thought about this event every day for 40 years of my life.
Wow.
And yet I was never talking about it. So I started talking about the book. I mean, I started talking about the murder, this that happened in my life and opening up about it. And one of the interesting things I learned, there were a couple of things. One was it helped me grow and move past some of the sort of harmful effects or, you know, unhelpful thought patterns that I had ingested. And then the second thing I learned was that many, many, many people have trauma like this in their lives. And you start opening up and sharing it with people and somebody else says, oh, yeah. And they'll tell you something that they experienced and that they are also going through life not talking about. And so I somehow thought like, oh, that those twin insights were useful for me. And I thought, oh, I should do a book about them. And I have been an illustrator for many, many years. And then I thought, oh, I want to do a graphic novel.
Yeah.
Well, given that you've done like a lot of rock posters and graphic design and other things like that, translating it and then jumping in and doing a graphic novel, what were the challenges there? What did you learn? What was your biggest mistake right off?
Oh, there were so many. I had to relearn everything. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing is funny is one thing I tell people is that cartooning is not illustration and illustration is not cartooning. They are two related but very separate talent groups or skill sets, you know. And so I really had to throw away a lot of my method of working, a lot of my habits, I had to learn to work quickly for one thing. A lot of times, one thing I have noticed is that a lot of times, like the best comic artists are people that are like animators, they like study animation. So they learn how to draw really quick and really expressively. Yeah. So I had to learn that. And I had had a much more sort of slow, tedious, and very, very like graphic design conscious way of drawing. And I had to just shatter that and throw it away.
So not only are you rewriting your skill set, you're also telling a deeply personal story. At the same time, you've become a lightning rod for other people's deeply personal stories.
Oh, this is true. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's why I had more hair before I started this
project. So how did that work then? Were you relearning those skills after you'd already sort of conceived the full text of the story? Or was it all like sort of like, oh, no, I have to refigure this out a couple times?
No, it was all at once. It was all at once. Oh, and, you know, man. I'm much more of a like, I have ADHD too. This is one that I may someday do a book on the subject of like being an artist with ADHD, like, because that's another thing that everybody else has. But one thing about that habit of mind is that you tend to see a problem all at once. You don't tend to break it down. Like people that don't have ADHD, they're like, oh, well, all I have to do is just break this down into its constituent parts, start with the first part, and then move on and do it consecutively. And if you have ADHD, you kind of can't do that. So I had to do it all at once. And I couldn't. And I've had learned, you know, from other comic artist friends of mine, they're like, oh, you write a script, sort of like a screenplay, and then you break it into panels and pages and make your book. And I found I couldn't do that. I had to draw and write at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, first off, speaking of the drawing and the writing, like, I just love the choices that you were making with the black and white and the shading and then the different kind of color punctuations. Just really kind of set this amazing tone for the book. So congratulations. But was it like, were you so happy to get this out or was it a nightmare to relive? Like, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, both things. I mean, there were times like the actual scene in which I encountered the body was the hardest part to draw. And I had thought that was surprising since I had been ruminating on it for 40 years. And I thought I sort of imagined I will just draw the way I remember it. And when I did, I found it very, very painful. It's even painful for me to look at the drawings even after all this. But one thing I do think about doing a project like this is that I feel like, I kind of transformed my trauma into boredom. So there was a healing process, you know, like,
and that's a win though, right? That's a technically better
progress. Absolutely.
Okay. Wow.
I'm curious about your influences here. You know, I was trying to think through it as I was reading the book. There were points when I got like a little bit of Daniel Clowes. There were some other things that I couldn't quite put my finger on. What was influencing you when you were talking?
Oh my God. I mean, I grew up, it's really a shame that it's taken me so long to do a graphic novel because I have been reading graphic novels since the 80s, right? Love and Rockets, Eight Ball. But also, other artists like Adrian Tomine?
Tomine, I believe.
Tomine.
Yeah. And I, you know, he used to live in Berkeley. I used to run into him every once in a while and I'd be like, you're the best. Those like nerdy fanboys. It's like, you're really great. And he'd be like, thanks. And I've run into Klaus before too. And that's, you know, I love all that stuff, but you know, for me, I think the memoir artists that came a little later, people like Marjane Satrapi, really influenced me. There's a French guy who goes by David B. The last name is just the initial B. And he wrote a book called Epileptic. Oh, wow. Do y'all know this book?
I don't think so.
No.
It was huge and then came out in the 90s. It was the big graphic novel, memoir, serious comic literature. It's great. It's great. And that really, really had a big impact on me as well.
Wow. You had mentioned earlier that one of the things that you found, and I don't know where this fell on the timeline, but one of the things you found doing this graphic novel is that there are a lot of other people that share maybe not the exact same trauma, but similar-ish trauma. That's, I mean, we touched on this a little bit before, but given the subject matter of most of the book feels like you are alone and everybody else, without spoiling too much, particularly when you're young, is like, stop talking about this. That must have been such a weight off of you, such a relief, I imagine.
It did. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Like when I started talking with other people and they'd say, they'd tell me something that had happened to them that was even worse, I felt better. and also just to have the sense of solidarity. There was some way that was one of the points for me of doing the book was this feeling of like, wow, the trauma doesn't have to just have a negative. I mean, it's a negative, horrible thing. And it's horrible that my neighbor was murdered like that. And is it wrong to look for like an upside or something, but to see like, wow, trauma also can give you more empathy. It can increase your empathy. If you maybe you need to handle it properly and study it and listen to the feelings. I mean, one of the things that I had to learn through my meditation practice and also from my therapist was this habit of like turning and listening to an unpleasant thought or an unpleasant feeling, locating it in your body and kind of just letting it be. Don't push it away. Don't fight it. Just kind of observe it. And when you do that, you kind of like increases your fellow, your feelings for your fellow humans. I don't know why, but it does. So it's just was a useful for me in that way. And I was hoping, I wrote the book hoping to kind of like just increase empathy in the world.
That's great. Well, thank you for doing that. Stop if you don't want to answer this, but will you give this book to your therapist?
Oh, indeed. You know what's funny? I just took a load of books to the post office and I sent it to him. Yeah. And he knew about it.
There's something to art therapy is a practice. And I feel like I don't know if your therapist does art therapy, but this has got to be an interesting area, if nothing else, for someone.
No, he's just a musician. And, you know, I put a little guitar in the corner of his office. I used to meet at his house, actually. And but he was always, when we were working together, I don't see him any longer because I felt like at a certain point, I'm like, I did 15 years of this and I think I paid off enough of this guy's, you know, mortgage. And we are still in touch. And but one of the things he was always working on me with, he was one of those therapists who will give you advice very directly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which is unusual. Yeah. When he would say, Hugh, when are you going to do your graphic novel?
Agent.
So it was good for me to stop seeing him 5 years ago, and then I pop up and I'm like, "Hey, I wrote my book, buddy."
In your face, spite book, take it. Yeah.
Similarly, I know you note this in the back matter that you ran it by them, but have the two kids that you live next door to, have they seen the book yet?
They have. They saw it they saw it at several points along the way. Like first when it was just only had one chapter and I was thinking about doing a book and realized, oh, I guess I have to talk to them. Mm-hmm. Hadn't seen them in 40 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And I had to track them down and find them and then ask them if they would bless the project. Cause of course I didn't want to do it without their blessing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have since had several conversations and it's been wonderful. And one of the younger brother, who is Ari in the book, I had a great meeting with him. And it was amazing that I recognized him right off the bat. We said, oh, let's meet in this restaurant. And then I'm on my way to the restaurant and I'm like, how am I going to recognize him? Yeah. You know what I mean? Maybe
he's not a kid now.
From my drawings. Do I look that much like my drawings? But I walk in and I see him. And I know who it's him 40 years later.
Wow. By the way, yes, you do look like your drawings.
Yes, you do. You do a good job. You do.
I mean, on that point, talking specifically about you, you are very much on display here. It's very raw in terms of how you're dealing with things and how you don't shy away from maybe some more difficult or erroneous things that you have done in your life. What, you know, this is the challenge of biocomics in general, but what is it like putting yourself out there like that?
Oh God, I don't know. I don't know how to do it any other way. I'm always like one of those people that's always telling stories about the stupid things he does. It seems to come naturally to me. There are a couple of times I have given the book to somebody who didn't know me that well or didn't know those sides of me. And I thought, oh, wow, this is now I'm feeling a little bit sensitive here, a little exposed because this person maybe doesn't know that I have always been struggling with like issues around masculinity and, you know, but what are you going to do? You know, like you got to tell the truth. The whole like it's just not worth doing a memoir unless you are willing to tell the truth, you know.
What else, now that you have this out here, I assume you don't have like a sequel in mind or anything like that.
Well, but, the ADHD.
Since you do have the graphic novel bug, is that the next thing you're going to tackle? Do you have something else in mind?
Or what did your therapist yell at you to make sure you did next?
I'm not really sure yet. I do have a few things, and it will be hard to match the kind of emotional wallop of this because of its sort of extreme, you know, nature. And so I'll probably revert to being a little bit more, doing another book that's a little bit more cerebral. And I would love to do one on ADHD. And then also I have a lifelong interest in the Kennedy assassination and in the life of the assassin in that case, Lee Harvey Oswald. And, you know, I consider doing a book on that subject as well.
Cool.
Wow. That's, I mean, awesome. It's supposed to be declassified information coming.
More the merrier.
Yeah.
Hugh, congratulations on the book. It really is phenomenal. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat and good luck with it.
Yeah. Thanks so much
for sharing. Great book, man. Talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Hugh. All right, there we go. Wow. Once again, that book is called The Murder Next Door. It's coming out February 4th from Street Noise Books, and it's great. Like,
really?
Also,
it's amazing.
One thing we didn't really talk about is it can be funny at times. Like, it's not just all harrowing darkness and trauma, though obviously it gets into that. There's a lot of different tones going on there, so definitely check it out.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And folks, we are going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions.
I got a question.
And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments. But before we get to that, and before we get to Pete's question, I do want to mention that we have a sponsor.
Oh, yeah. You got to do your... Yeah.
Yes, I got to do my... Yeah. You go okay with that, Pete?
You got to do your... No, you got to do your big read. I was going to say big read,
dance,
but I didn't want to...
dance. I got to
do your little dance.
Yeah, dance for the sponsors. No, our sponsor this week is a comic called The Protectors. We got a little text here from our sponsor. The beauty of The Protectors lies in inclusivity. It's not limited to any specific people or race. It encompasses everyone, regardless of their cultural or personal background. Initially, The Protectors began as a group of Vikings, but as they ventured across the universe, liberating enslaved planets and standing against corruption, the newly freed inhabitants joined them no matter who the oppressors are, who attempts to sow discord. Among the people, the protectors remain steadfast in their mission. Their sole focus is on those who choose to fight for the innocent and strive for the betterment of the world. It doesn't matter what one believes in or where they come from. What truly matters is that they stand united side by side, brothers and sisters, bound by an oath to safeguard others from harm. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit, nothing against our sponsor here, but there's a guy named Marv who is the protagonist of the book. It is a fantasy series, again, called The Protectors, and Marv has a journey that is marked by profound sorrow and bewilderment. His parents, esteemed protectors, are frequently dispatched on missions, leaving him feeling perpetually isolated. As Marv matures, a gradual understanding of their noble cause dawns upon him, prompting him to embark on his own training to follow in their footsteps. However, an internal wound still festers within him, hindering his process to become a protector. Marv must not only master the required skills, but also find solace and conquer his haunting loneliness. As the characters grapple with their destinies, the narrative unfolds with intricate details, bringing to life a universe brimming with danger and intrigue. The relentless pursuit of justice, the burdens of leadership, and the unyielding commitment to defend the weak create a multifaceted story that resonates with readers long after the final page is turned.
Bravo.
For complete information, visit theprotectors.site. S-I-T-E.
Wow. Hey, wait, Justin, as a classically trained actor, you got to be impressed with that a little bit.
I got to say, very well structured. Felt dramatic,
that, right? That, well, man, what a read, Zalbatron.
Dramatically built, perfectly paced.
Yeah, that really built up there nicely.
No problem. I feel like I did all the work, so I'll pocket the ad money, but thank you guys for being here.
That seems fair.
How's that different from any time before? See you later.
Yeah.
We also have, beyond our sponsor, we have a drink this evening, which, oh my gosh, I tried to write it down and then I'm blanking on what it is. But Stray Bullet did it. Hold on, I'll open it up.
Stray Bullets.
What are you guys drinking in the meantime while I open up?
I might not have a garage, but I got garage beer.
Nice. I am back in that high life again.
Oh, good. Yes, the drink was a pink Wookiee because it's Mardi Gras season and they got Chewbacca's going on, which is their crazy Wookiee parade. Pete, we got a Wookiee parade.
We got to go down there next year for the Wookiee parade. Come on, who's with me?
We'll come visit you.
Visit you in your house in New Orleans because you're going to be living there by that point, right, Pete?
Maybe not a house, maybe a houseboat. Let's not forget that.
Oh, yeah! Pete in a houseboat?
Yeah, he might be living at Café Du Monde as the sugar taster or whatever.
don't put stuff like that. That's a dream job. I would die immediately.
I am 100% picturing you, the Big Lebowski dude style, living on a houseboat, no shirt.
Yeah.
Everybody comes here. They're like, amen. Uncle Pete. It's Uncle Pete. Come on. Covered in powdered sugar.
You got to lick the donut again, man. You got to lick it again.
Schuykler is on point as always. Private detective living on a houseboat. That'd be good. Great.
Would you case live of on a the missing Pete? Beignets.
I don't know. A buddy of mine in New York had a boat for a while that we would pass out on sometimes. So
a New York houseboat, very cold in the winter, my friend.
Yeah. So I don't know if I'd do that. Plus, sleeping on the water, it does mess with your dreams. It gets pretty weird out there.
Makes it better. Yeah.
First question here from Michael Tillman.
I have first question, sir.
Okay. All right. I'll do my joke in a second.
Thank you. Justin, I wanted to check in, see how you're doing. Rough game. I mean, come on, dude. Are you all right?
Of course. Go
Chiefs!
You motherfucker.
Zalbatron's a Swiftie, so we know he's a Chiefs fan.
I honestly almost texted you guys because I felt so bad. Seems like it was a tight game right down to the wire.
Wow.
It was. It was.
Alex, hard to believe any side of his two takes he just laid out there. But yes, sad game for the Buffalo Bills. I am a fan and just can't get over that hump. That's four times.
Ah, dude, yeah, it's a lot more than four when you add it all up, but yeah, it's
rough. Against the Chiefs,
yeah,
specifically.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Four times here with the Chiefs, and then four times, going to the bowl, but man, yeah, it was tough. A lot of family and friends.
So sorry, this is weird to bring up. I think I'm at the wrong show. I'm supposed to be at a comic book show, not a sports show.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm checking in with my friend to make sure he's okay. We just had these incredible true stories where people struggled with things. I just want to make sure Justin's all right.
This is equal.
Not equal.
Same level.
Not equal, but you say
I discovered the corpse of a football season.
There you go.
On television.
Yeah.
Great. Can we go to some other questions?
Yeah, now you can go. Sorry, Alex, for having feelings.
That's okay. Michael Tillman says, what do you think of the Protectors? Great question. I would say the beauty of the Protectors lies in his... No, I won't do it again.
Do the entire thing.
Jared Sloan says, when the dust settles on this whole diamond saga, do you think the industry will be in a stronger, weaker, or neutral place, and why? Great question, Jared. Lots of moving parts there, but the basis for anybody who isn't aware of this, Diamond Comics Distributors has declared bankruptcy. That doesn't mean that they're closing entirely. It just means they're selling off a lot of their assets. They owe a lot of money to a lot of different companies. And as a result, not kind of the thing that's been happening anyway, but a lot of companies are leaving Diamond as their primary distributor, which means, for example, Boom Studios was supposed to leave July 1st because they're owned by Penguin Random House. They're now leaving on April 1st. Penguin Random House will be the primary distributor for Boom titles, but Diamond will also distribute them. So it's not going to change too much immediately for comic book stores and comic book fans, but obviously there are some big changes coming down the pike. Justin, you're smiling. What's your take on it?
It feels like, well, the way you described it sounds like, I don't know, it sounds like as confusing as it always has with Diamond.
It's so confusing. It's
like, yeah. But I think, I feel like it's like how the New York City subway system works, where when you go look at it, it's like, this is run the same way it was run in 1940 by like pneumatic tubes or whatever. And that to me is what Diamond is, where it's like, this is a company where it's four very old men pulling some levers and then comic books come out. And it's like, yeah, maybe it is time to rejuvenate that in some way. Mm-hmm. So I do think it will change. And whether like stronger or weaker, I think it's hard to say. But I got to think a change will only be for the better.
Let's hope so, yeah.
A couple of things that I'll throw out there, not necessarily to contradict what you're saying, because I do agree that a change is needed. But you're 100% wrong, and I hate you.
Wow.
That's not true.
We're not all in the same place.
It is going to be hard on smaller comic book companies, because one of the good things that Diamond did was they took a chance on distributors, independent distributors, people who had just like one comic to their name. They were very outgoing about that and very supportive of that sort of thing, which is not probably going to happen with like Lunar Distributors, who handles Image and DC Comics and a couple of others, or Penguin Random House. So they're going to have to find a new way of doing it. The good news is, I think people have already started to find new ways of doing it, like through Kickstarter, Zoop, self-publishing, etc. It's harder. Diamond gives you an immediate lift, so you aren't getting that, but I think they will find ways around it, hopefully, and there'll be some of those growth pains. The other way that, and this is just like, I think, an annoyance, but it can potentially be bigger than that if there are any comic book stores that are either listening or watching or whatever, let us know how you feel about this, but it's, I think there's a ease in, great, I filled out my Diamond form. I know when things are coming. Here we go. Yeah. Everybody else is on a different schedule. Now they're going to have to fill out multiple forms from multiple different places to get their comics. That's annoying. It's frustrating. If there's a stoppage in one place than the other, there's different charges. So it makes the whole business more complicated. So there certainly is a worry that, same thing, small comic book stores may just not be able to handle it necessarily in the same way the larger distributors will be. So this is a long way of saying that I think the comic book industry will come out of this, but there needs to be some actual palpable changes rather than what usually happens, which is, oh gosh, we're facing this bit of adversity. Let's keep doing what we've been doing and going from there.
I mean, I feel like that's been the discussion for truly 20 years about Diamond. So it's like, I guess we'll see.
Yeah. This is from Scheuchler. If you wrote a book, comic or novel based on your early life or your family's earlier life, what would you write about?
Oof.
Ooh, interesting.
Oh, man. Pete giving a bunch of grumpuses here.
Yeah, I mean, there's a
Pete,
there's
explain
a lot.
Your grumpus.
There's a lot that I could be writing about, and not a lot that I want to share with you knuckleheads. But,
Pete, I feel like you've told us pretty much everything at this point.
Yeah, you've told us everything,
Pete. No.
Are there?
No, my friends, I have not.
Dangerous quotes around that.
Yeah. But JT Sissel has seen a show that I did where I did kind of talk a lot about my younger childhood and struggles.
And that would be great as a graphic novel entitled Turning LePage.
Oh, God.
Alex, what you got?
Gosh, I'd probably do a graphic novel about growing up with the adversity of having a mom who wrote a book that put you on the cover, but I swear the book was not about me. It just had a lot of similarities to me. And that was really hard in sixth grade when people were like, your mom wrote a book about you. And I'm like, no, it is a different character named Andrew O'Bleckman. Excuse me.
Wow. Look, you went right into your little speech mode there. That was,
was it you? It was you though, right?
No, it was just a kid who really liked jokes and lived with his mom and dad and was Jewish and lived in a small town on Long Island. But
just to recontextualize, your trauma up as your mom putting you, making you famous. Your mom has helped you.
Yeah, and put you've always been comic book famous. We get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it was traumatic. It was traumatic. I think we can all agree. Equally traumatic to everything we've talked about on the show so far.
100%. Yeah. I had an uncle that stowed away, that met a nurse in World War II. Went back home, stowed away in a ship, and then married her in Australia and lived there and had a pretty insane life. So that would be a good deep history.
Wow.
My family.
Wow.
Michael Tillman says, what's your favorite Gen Alpha slang, skibbity?
Nailed it.
I like say less.
Oh, I love that for us.
Oh, good. I don't know about that one.
I think we use so much of it. You can just pick out what we love.
Easy Reader says, did you talk about the new Flying Superman trailer? I like it. This is the 30-second commercial that I believe played during the NFL games on Sunday.
During the Bills' loss, yes.
Yeah. Do you think that's why the Bills lost? Because
yeah. Everyone was saying
red, white, and blue, though. I mean, you know, there is a little bit of...
Josh Allen was like, time for me to cape up. And then he was so intimidated by Superman himself. Oh, yeah.
Got a couple of other quick hits here. Schreikler says, how great is Wolverine snicked?
He is great. Thanks, Schreikler.
Answered his own question.
Great question.
I think he's not so great.
No. Oh, wow. Controversial. Nat Townsend says, what are some of Alex's favorite moments in NFL history?
Ooh, this will be fun.
This is a good
question. My God. When Taylor ran out on the field at the
Taylor?
Taylor
I don't
Swift.
Know if she ran. He's talking about Taylor Swift, Pete, not Lawrence Taylor.
Okay.
ran out of the field at the end, and I was like, are they going to do it? Is he actually going to propose marriage? And they didn't.
They said they'd do it, and I'm hopeful this year.
I'm hopeful this year.
So the greatest moment in NFL history is what happened this past weekend?
No, this is one of my favorite moments in NFL history, not one of the greatest moments.
That doesn't count as NFL history. Well, that counts as Alex's recent memory.
It happened previously.
History is not everything that happens. It's not like, hey, I went to the bathroom. That's not history.
History in the making.
That's not.
What are some of your favorite comics about sports?
Great question, Nat. And I've got to say, the one that immediately jumps to mind is that book that we've been talking about a lot lately with the Murder Ball, I want to say. I Heart Skull Crusher. Yeah.
That book is great. Great pick.
That book is great. Very sports.
Bitch Planet's also.
It's set in a dystopian future, but it's still a very good book. I got to think Alex's answer is going to be that fencing manga he read once.
Yeah, it was all right. Fence? It's okay.
Yeah.
I Heart Skull Crusher is a great pick. I'm going to steal that too.
No, yep. That's good. Nice compliment, but you have to come up with your own. And you can say NFL Super Pro, but that's a pretty canned answer.
Super Pro, those are the days.
Sports. Gosh.
What about,
is cooking a sport?
Definitely not. Traditionally
Because
not.
Iron Walk Jan, the manga about a cooking competition.
I mean, competition.
Yeah, we've heard you talk
cooking.
About that book before.
Can get on that. Pete, did you have an answer?
I didn't. I'm drawing a blank. I did like your answer.
Well, you love it when the X-Men plays baseball.
No, that's not what I like.
Yeah, Pete hates that. Yeah. Pete, do you hate that more than regular X-Men or less?
That's a tough call. It's a tough call. Maybe the same?
Okay.
Equal amount of hatred?
Hot take.
I'm trying to figure out what Schoikler is talking about here with the... Give him the password. I'm not sure what he's talking about.
Hold on. We're not there yet.
Sorry.
You're distracted. Frederica Rosa says, how do you guys feel about reading stuff from problematic people after discovering it? I feel like it's wrong to buy it to give them any name. So I basically read only stuff I already own.
Ooh. Well, first off, I mean, I appreciate what you're doing. But there is such great stuff out there. I'd hate for you to be like, I'm just going to play it safe, because there's amazing artists and amazing writers out there creating unbelievable stuff. So please continue to seek out great things and don't just read the stuff that you own. You can always go back to the stuff that you own, but please don't give up on it just because it's a crazy world out there.
Well, no, I think it's more about like reading new work by someone that, I mean, this question is about, I would guess, prompted by the Neil Gaiman revelations.
Right.
And a creator that I think, me included, love the work, but these revelations are difficult to then feel good about, being like, I got to dive back into the next project that he does. But I would say, you know, thinking about this a lot, and it's something that I think it just mars, even if you're going back and rereading older work, it feels a little marred by what you're learning, and it definitely changes the story. So I think I haven't gone back to reread any of that stuff, and I don't know if I will soon.
If that makes sense. Wow.
Yeah, I we've talked about this here on the show before, but I think it is not just individual to the creator, but it's also individual to the reader. I don't think there's any blanket thing that you can say across the board, because everybody feels differently about absolutely everything. And I don't know, I can't think of a specific example where there was a problematic creator where I was like, yeah, I'll watch that, or I'll read that or whatever. But I'm sure it's happened. I'm sure there's people that, like, legitimately, there's been so many terrible people in the comic book industry that I've probably forgotten at some point and read something again. But yeah, like you're saying, it definitely, to use the specific example of Neil Gaiman, it is impossible now to think about reading Sandman without that flipping the experience in some way and looking for the person that we now know he is. Which is unfortunate.
But I would say, I feel like a lot of people, there's now guilt associated with the work. Mm. And if you like reading a thing that this person made, that any person that we've learned something horrible about, don't deprive yourself of something that makes you happy because they are bad. I do think, just that guilt is a bad feeling to let this be compounded because of someone else's bad behavior. So I don't think you should feel bad about doing something that you like just because of a revelation that came much later.
Yeah, but I mean, it's nice that Federico brought this up, because this is a tough thing, because it is tough when you love something and then you find out and it ruins it for you, and then you're kind of questioning the whole thing, you know. So,
and I think questioning is good and thinking about it is good, but I'm just saying, feeling bad personally is not helpful. And so, like, I would say we all don't have to feel guilt because we've supported someone in the past that we later learn has done some truly alarming things.
All right. This is one specifically for me, I believe, from Michael Tillman. He says, went to the Comic-Con this weekend and got Tom Grummett to sign a special X-Men comic written by none other than Dr. Zalbin. We were distressed to remember that the issue finishes with the team eating vegetables rather than tacos. What gives? To give a little background here, I was hired to write a X-Men comic that was given out in Taco Bell kid meals when those
existed. Oh, yeah, I remember this.
Yeah. And so there were very few edicts that they gave me, but one of the things that came down from Taco Bell is there needed to be a message about healthy eating in the book, because I don't know this part, but I do know that with fast food restaurants and other places, there needs to be a component legally of like, yeah we know you're eating cheese beef tacos, but also vegetables, water, hooray. Like, there needs to be a portion of that available. No, seriously, like, that's why McDonald's started offering bottles of water in their Happy Meals, is because you need to offer a healthy alternative to kids beyond soda or other things. So, yeah, I wrote I don't remember the exact thing I wrote. There was definitely something about, like, I made some joke about Cyclops eating a penis of celery in the last thing, and I thought they would cut it out, and they didn't, and then he drew it, and they're all just standing around with vegetables, like raw vegetables of the last battle. So there you go.
It seems like something Scott would do, you know, stand around eating celery.
Yeah, for sure. Let's see. Lots of stuff talking about this. What was the password thing that you were talking about, Pete?
I don't know. Schuykler was saying the Wolverine question was me giving the password. Was I wrong?
Oh, okay. Is that the password for your secret quiz, Pete?
Well, first, you can't just start with the password. You got to say, I would like to take the secret quiz. Then
what if we just
I'll
did a blanket? What if we just did a blanket, everyone
then
saying
you,
that? What if everyone
say
is
the
just
password?
Saying?
Yeah, just assume that.
And I got to check my sheet here, so let me just see if this works.
Here's the ultimate. First off, did anyone do the screen grab of the last week's show?
Yeah, I guess nobody did.
Secondly, the sheet sits right next to Pete's laptop. Heist. Break into Pete's house. Get the sheet.
Hey, whoa. No, that is incorrect. Incorrect, sir.
Okay, so it's not Wolverine. All right, well, there you go. That's it for your audience questions. Woo-hoo. And now we are going to move on to our next section, which is trivia, which is different from what we were just doing. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
Why would you think that trivia and audience questions are the same thing? They're completely
different.
Well,
trivia and the trivia that you were just trying to do are different, is my point.
Oh, right. My bad.
Yeah. Because
Pete, it's your section. Stop drinking.
Stop drinking.
Hey, this is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity when $25
drinks an entire beer before he steps.
Yeah, it's true facts.
Let's rip some sweet burp.
$25 to Midtown Comics online.
Hey, Vanna.
If you had $25, you want some comics, right?
Ooh, Easy Reader said, "Pick me already."
Nice.
Ooh, all right. Great. Let's do that then. All right. Today's trivia is about the award-winning writer Daniel Way and a small nod to the legend John Capodici. R.I.P. Mario from Speed.
I love the Italian pronunciation you gave there, Pete.
Very oh, thanks. Odd. I tried, you know, because that's how you pronounce it, so I was trying to do it. Easy Reader, please listen all three options before making your selection. Okay, here we go. Question number one. What was the name of Daniel Way's debut comic? Was it A, Violent Lifestyle, B, So Protective, Not a Very Open Person, C, Tom Wall?
A lot of people speculating about where you live, Pete.
About
don't worry,
where I live?
Yeah, they'll track you down. Yeah, is it A?
A is correct, yes. All right, here we go. Question number two. What is the name of the first Marvel title he was hired for? Is it A, Deathlok, B, Damn This Horse, Does It Have Four Left Feet, C, Florence Mistrot?
How much, are you doing any thesaurus work? Are you doing any, like...
No, you think I should? You think it's obvious? I need to be broadening my
repertoire? I think I'm just saying, like, you're able to pinpoint these.
A? Is it A?
It is A.
Wow.
It's killing it. Here we go. Last one. What is the Marvel title that is my personal favorite that he worked on? Was it A, Deadpool, B, Who the Hell Keeps Eating My Lunch, C, Gary Munch?
Wow, a personal favorite question to close out trivia.
That's right, because Alex loves stuff like this.
I do. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was just talking to my son about it the other day, and he was asking, why don't you like trivia? And I ran through exactly this pattern.
I love how your son brought it up. He's like, hey, Dad,
Dad, what's wrong with you?
Yeah. Dad, this is clearly my favorite part of the show. Why do you hate it?
No, his favorite part of the show is audience questions because you make it up.
Wow. Oh man!
Like father, like son. Wow. You're really imparting.
Wow!
Yeah. Raising a little bee over here. Well, congratulations, Easy Reader. You have won a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email, and we will get that to you. Pete, what secret movie were you indicating?
Well, speaking of problematic, I was talking about the 1994 comedy Ace Ventura: Pet Detective.
Oh man!
Yeah,
interesting. Why? Why would you? Because the person died.
Guado, yeah.
Nice.
What?
I wish we could get the
man. Guado was the name of the character that he played on Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Yeah, put some respect on it, Alex. Yeah, Guado Alex. Has passed. Yeah. Alex, Guado is gone.
I'm gonna watch that tonight.
Guado is Guado, Alex.
When did he die? I don't think it's 5 months ago? Something like that?
Yeah, somewhere in that range.
I don't check the flagpoles. Not accepted. Alex, yeah. Check the flagpoles. If they're half mast, it's because Guado has passed. The flags are at half mast, it's because Guado has passed. It's something I wake up and say every morning.
As we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. What are you guys looking forward to that's coming out?
I just love the idea of Justin waking up and checking flags. You know, just being like, "Where are we? Where are we? What's yeah. it? Is it half mass? Is it full mass? How's my day going to be?"
Many for like 6 weeks. So like, I don't know what.
Alex, I'm glad you asked. Seasons number one, as well as Turtles of Grayskull number 3.
Great. No further questions, Justin. What about you? What are you looking forward to?
I mean, it's almost embarrassing at this point to say. Ice Cream Man is something I'm looking forward to, but I gotta shout it out. This is the issue that I believe W. Maxwell Prince has invited a ton of creators to come in and write pieces of the story. Cannot wait to find out what that is going to be like. I gotta shout out Seasons number one as well. Very excited to finally have that book out on the stands. And there was one more I was going to think of, but nope, that's it. Alex, take it away.
You guys took most of my picks, but I will give a shout out to you. There's a new issue of Red Before Black is coming out from Boom Studios. Great, fun, trippy crime thriller from Stephanie Phillips and Goran Suzuka. That's been away for a little while, I think, so it's nice to see it back for a fourth issue. Also, Book of Cutter, number one. This is another oversized special set in the world of Something is Killing the Children, and those are always just like big mythology issues, so excited to see what they do with that. What
I was
going to
say,
Justin?
Redcoat is one that of all of the Ghost Machine books, Redcoat is one that I think has really found its footing. I've been enjoying
Jared Sloan agrees with you.
Shout out to Jared Sloan. Shout out to David Cruz with Dust to Dust 2. Dust to Dust is the dustiest book on the stands, and I'm looking forward also to see how much dustier it can get.
Oh, it's dustier.
Well, all of those books and many more are going to be in our Stack podcast, which drops Wednesday 9 a.m., both in the Stack feed and in the Comic Book Club feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank Alisa Quitney for coming on to talk about Howl. Issue number one is out now from Ahoy Comics. Also, Hugh Dandrati for talking about the Murder Next Door that comes out February 4th. From Street Noise Books, so definitely check that out. Next week on the show, we're going to have Brian Hawkins is going to be here to talk about Mad Cave Studios Blocked, so check that out. Also, thank you to our sponsor, the Protectors, so check that out as well. Comic Book Club News, our daily news show Monday through Friday. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. You can subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. Comic Book Club on Blue Sky. Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Thank you, folks. Good night.
Sit on crappy couches and they let the secrets leak. Occasionally they let that special guest speak. So grab your inhaler and don't be late for it, cause their girlfriends can barely tolerate it. Comic Book Club, Comic Book Club, Comic Book Club, Comic Book Club.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.